on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, August 31st, 2015 edition of InvestTalk. And I'd like to welcome all of our listeners, no matter how you're listening, whether it's online on InvestTalk.com, listening on iTunes, through our podcast network, or maybe you're listening to our terrestrial stations in California. However you're reaching us, I'm glad you could join us on this Monday in a somewhat historic month for the market. We closed the end of the month today. The S&P was down 6%, and that's the worst month we've had in a while, and since 2012. So you can see that this is the froth is starting to come off the market, but the big question is it enough? And I guess we'll see that coming up here in the near future. So if you have something on your mind, whatever it is, we encourage you to call in, ask questions, whatever you can think of, whatever is on your mind when it comes to money, we want to hear from you. This show is about answering your questions, about making sure you are prepared to make the right financial decisions. And being prepared for market changes like this is the hallmark of a successful investor, and it's true that there are always surprises. I think we all kind of knew there would be a pullback in the market, and there would be a drop. To what extent, we didn't know. Is this the end? I would say probably not, but it could be. And, there's always surprises, but you have to be prepared for them. Now, Steve and I have been talking about this for a long time, so now we're in one, and the question is, how are you responding to this change in trend? Are you panicking? Do you have a plan to deploy money as the market goes down? Do you have a plan to de-risk your portfolio if the market continues to the downside? The big question, do you have a plan? Okay, that's the big question. Do you have a plan? That's number one. And then you react according to your plan. Okay? So, it's important to understand the moves in the market in context to your own plan, your own goals. Not everyone should be treating this market the exact same. Depends on your time horizon. Depends on your view of the market. Depends on the investments in your portfolio. And that's why Steve does his portfolio checkups on a very regular basis, because a lot of people don't know how to assess the risk in their portfolio. Should they be increasing the risk now or decreasing it? Well, that depends on a lot of factors. Now, the most more important part of the economic numbers that are coming out recent or have been coming out recently is job creation, and that's something that I'm going to discuss a little bit more coming up on the show, because we have a big jobs report coming out in the next week on Friday. We have another one on Wednesday, the ADP report. So I'm going to get into that a little bit more. What should we be looking for going forward, and how might this recent bout of market volatility, how is that might affect the numbers that are going to come out in the coming weeks? Now, the U.S. economy has done fairly well recently without much help from the rest of the world. And Europe is still weak, but they are improving. China is clearly slowing, and there's many private analysts that are saying their economy is now shrinking, even though they'll say it's growing at 7%. But if you measure it by other factors, that's probably not the case. Then you have Japan, who's still printing money, still easing, trying to boost their economy, and it's going okay. And if they succeed, this should benefit our own economy because they're a fairly large economy. That should help the global growth overall. So it's going to be interesting to see how these market disruptions start to feed into other economies, even ours, because it will have some effect, just a matter of how much. Now, what are your thoughts? We'd like to hear from you. If you have a question, why not ask it now? You can get through to me at 888-99-CHART. You can call it anytime. Let's take this question that came in before today's program. We're going to go to a live caller, to David in San Jose. How you doing, David?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing good. What can I do for you?
I was wondering about Amiskus, the stock or the ticker symbol is Fold, F-O-L-D. Just wondering what you can tell me about that.
Okay. Fold. Let me check this out. F-O-L-D is the symbol, and this is Amicus Therapeutics. They develop small molecule drugs known as pharmacological blah, blah. It's a pharma company, basically. They treat all types of interesting types of diseases. My question is, why are you looking at this?
I was looking to make a move to invest into them. They have a couple of drugs in clinical phase two, and they've been pretty strong over the last few months that I've been kind of on the sidelines watching them.
Okay.
And I think now might be a good time to jump in with this whole correction thing going on.
All right. Well, I would say I couldn't disagree with you more. This is a company that has never made money. It's still not projected to make money, and it's a story stock. This is complete 100%, 1,000% gambling, David. You're gambling that those phase one and two trials, A, are going to hit and actually have positive results, which they may or may not. And even if they do, the results might already be built into the price. And then technically, it's now breaking down with the whole biotech sector. The whole biotech sector is now weak and below the 200-day moving average. So it seems like you're chasing here. It is up dramatically. It's up from, the low was about $6 back at the end of last year and hit a high of about $18. So it had a very large run. It's starting to give that up. Actually, the low was $2 back in early part of last year. And there's zero reason besides a story that anybody should be investing in this stock. They're burning cash at a dramatic rate. They don't have a ton of debt, which is a positive. So they could continue to burn cash at this rate. But all they do is issue more shares. They've gone from 1 million shares outstanding in 2006 to 90 million shares outstanding today. And every single year, they continue to issue more and more shares. And they've recently done that because they're taking advantage of the schmucks that are buying this stock based on a story. So if you want to gamble, David, by all means, go for it. If you want to invest, this is not an investment. In no way, shape, or form is this an investment. They are burning cash. They are losing money. They've never done anything but. And I expect the odds of them ever to do anything but are fairly low. So, no, I would not be investing in this company.
All right.
Thanks,
Thank
David.
You.
No problem. That's FOLD. It's a biotech company. And it's a story stock. It looks like many of these biotech stocks. Now, is there any investment you could hold from college into retirement? Holding a mutual fund for 50 years. What to look for if you're looking for long-term mutual fund holdings? Hint, don't be chasing what did well last year. That really has nothing to do with it. So that's one of our talking points today that I want to get to, but I also have some others as well. I want to go over the recent the data that's going to come up this week economically, and what to expect for the payroll reports coming out on Friday. And then I also want to talk about the 10-year Treasury yield. Right now, it is at 2.2% at the close today. The low on the year was back in January, and that was around 1.6, 1.7 in that range. And there's an argument that it could be at 4 by the end of the year. 4%. That would be quite interesting and quite bearish, if you ask me, for the overall markets. But there's one analyst that thinks that could be the case, and I want to lay out his arguments, which I think are somewhat valid. And then I also want to talk about the Fed gearing up to hike amid a rocky terrain. It is clearly we're in rocky markets. Volatility is up, and it has remained up, even though it's not back to that 50 level that we saw back just a few trading days ago. But we are at about 28 now on the VIX, and it's not really backing off too much. So to me, that shows that volatility is probably likely here to stay. So I want to talk about that and what that means for the Fed coming up in the next month or so. But first, let's take a quick review of today's market before we get to your calls. The S&P ended the day down 17 points, a little less than 1%. The NASDAQ was down a little more than 1%, 51 points. The Dow was down 115 points. That's about 0.7%. You had gold up and oil was up big. You had the reduction in production. That's exactly what I said. And in the U.S., and that was really what has driven oil prices up so dramatically. Crude oil is now in around the $50 level, where just a few days ago it was hanging around $37, $38 a barrel. So it's a pretty interesting move in oil recently. You have Saudi Arabia talking about maybe cutting production, and that also boosted oil prices as well. A lot of short covering, I'm sure, in there. So that was really the market today. Now, I'm registered investment advisor and financial advisor Justin Klein. When a market correction occurs, should you turn on your TV for the latest news? No. Act. Don't react. Okay. This is Invest Talk. We are here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Dan in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Dan?
Doing good. Thank you for taking my call, Justin. I always enjoy the talk and the show. It's very nice.
Well, glad you enjoy it.
Absolutely. MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, have been getting killed this year.
Yep.
And even though they're supposedly the toll road for natural gas and oil and not the commodity, but they're getting killed. And I wonder what you would think about the MLP ETF that is sort of like a basket of them. And even more so, I'm really interested in the 2X leverage version of that, which is called MLPL.
Well, I don't like leveraged funds for anything more than a trade. So I would probably say definitely no to that. And the reason that these master limited partnerships have been getting killed, and the story's always been with these master limited partnerships, is like you said, they're just the toll road. They don't care what oil prices do because they just move the commodities around, right?
Right, exactly that.
But the problem is they have contracts with suppliers of the commodities, and the odds are good that many of them are going to start to go out of business, right?
Okay.
Because when you have a contract with a company to supply product and to make money off the distribution of that product and they go out of business, what happens to you? They can't deliver on that contract.
But I mean, in the long term, won't we still be using the oil and the gas? I mean, someone else will step in, would they not? Or am I misunderstanding?
Well, they're going to have to go out and contract with those other companies that are, you know, have supply as well. And now you have production starting to fall here in the U.S. And then on top of that, a lot of these MLPs have a lot of debt. Remember, they're very capital intensive. And so they carry a lot of debt, and their debt is junk rated. It's not quality debt. Okay. So I'm going to go to a break real quick, and when we get back, I'm going to pick this topic up. Okay? Now, you've heard of dollar cost averaging. Do you understand the principle of that? Is it a good strategy for you? Give me a call. Let's talk about it. Or bring your money topic to us at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. It's commonly thought that people with large investment portfolios are smart investors, but it's simply not true. Portfolio pitfalls, a million-dollar portfolio with serious flaws. That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
All right, we're getting back to Dan, who is asking about the Alerian MLP ETF, or MLPs generally as a sector. And you want to talk about getting into this this area, and you're trying to figure out what the risks are.
Correct, and whether or not you think in the next like 10 years this is going to be an important part of the infrastructure for moving the products around that people use, and whether or not it would be a good investment.
Well, there's certainly going to be continue to be, I think, a lot of volatility in this space. I can just go back to MMP, which is one of the biggest, most respected master limited partnerships out there in the marketplace. In 2007, well, oil was very, very high, right? Hit a high of about $26 or so, $26.70, and it went as low as $10. So you can see that there can be a lot of volatility, and when the yield spreads widen out in the bond market, meaning bond investors want to take less risk, they tend to shy away from master limited partnerships. And so you're going to see an increased level of bankruptcies on that side, and you're probably going to continue to see a downtrend as long as the high yield market sees a downtrend, and it still is in a downtrend. So I think there's probably more to go in that space. Now, using an ETF is probably a good idea because then you get diversification from that. But remember, I was trying to remember, does that Alerian MLP, does that have a K-1? I think it doesn't. Am I right?
I think it does not have a K-1. I own individual MLPs that do have K-1s.
Yeah.
I think it's more like a traditional, I don't know that the dividend is necessarily qualified, but I don't believe you get a K-1 with it.
Yeah, so that's a big attractiveness for me as well, is not having to deal with a K-1. So, you know, if you want to go that route, this is not a bad way to go. However, you know, are you going to see a lot of volatility over the next 10 years? I think absolutely you will. And then, you know, is Tesla the start of a green, you know, revolution with electric cars and the demand for gasoline going to drop? I think the demand for gasoline will drop over time because of emission standard rules and electric cars, etc. So how that plays out going forward, I think, will also be very interesting. So I don't think it's a safe play at all, but I do think it's a relatively attractive sector, and that's a relatively attractive way to play it in the long term.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Sounds good.
No problem, Dan. Thanks for calling. He was asking about master limited partnerships, and these are generally companies that own the infrastructure to move commodities, mainly oil, natural gas, throughout our country, and they pay and they collect a toll to do that. But the problem is that they're heavily indebted a lot of times. They usually have low graded debt issued, so they pay a lot of interest on that debt. And that can be a headwind to profitability and a problem with refinancing their balance sheet when the time comes if the credit markets aren't very good. So on an individual basis, they can be very volatile, very risky. And also, the interest rates look good, or the dividends look good, but remember, you get a K-1, and they're taxed at an individual tax rate. So the dividends aren't as good as they might seem because of the higher tax effectiveness. So just understand that when you're dealing with MLPs. Now let's talk a little bit about mutual funds. And there's a lot of people out there that want to find a mutual fund, or maybe even ETF nowadays, since they're so prevalent, that they can hold for 40, 50 years. And that's understandable. It would be great if you could just buy a mutual fund, forget about it, and 50 years later wake up and you're doing fantastic. And while I think that certainly is, possible to find that type of fund, it is very difficult. And why is it difficult? Well, because certain markets, certain funds do well. For many years, there were funds that did fantastic in the 90s. Right? Most funds did fantastic, but there were certain ones that did even better than the average. And they were probably focused on growth. Growth. Because growth did well, especially in the late 90s. But then the secular bear market hit after 2000, and growth kind of waned until just about recently. The last few years, growth has done very well as well. So understanding that different funds work well in different market cycles is important to be able to hold for a long term. And a lot of people might get freaked out if the market goes down 50%. In an equity fund, you're probably going to lose half your money. Can you handle that? Can you ride through that for 50 years? Probably many of those types of events. That's the big question. So I think having a fund that you can hold for 50 years is really about having a fund that is appropriate for your risk tolerance and your goals, so you will hold it for 50 years. Because the biggest detriment is you making rash investment decisions. Okay? Now you can see the latest dates for retirement reviews on investtalk.com. Steve will be in San Ramon, in Fremont, San Diego County, Carlsbad, La Jolla, and our home office in Dana Point. And we're here for you, beginner or experienced investor, at 888-99-CHART. And if you are a podcast listener and can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can leave your question and we will answer it on the next InvestTalk, just like this caller did.
Hello, this is Jim in Atlanta, Georgia. I know how you talk about return on equity should be greater than 15. And I was wondering about EBITA. If we looked at that, what level would be a good level for EBITA? And where do you find that? How can I find EBITA for a stock I'm looking at? Appreciate your show very much, and I'll listen on here. Thanks a lot.
All right, he's looking at EBITA, which is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. And that's going to be a dollar figure. So it depends on the company. You know, big companies are going to have really big EBITDA lines, and small companies are going to have very small EBITDA lines. So, you know, it's definitely not a hard number. It's more of a ratio. I like to look at maybe enterprise value to EBITDA, which is total market cap plus the amount of debt they have in their balance sheet, etc. EBITDA margin is good. That's something that I think is important. And it all really depends on the industry. Some industries have high EBITDA margin percentages. Some are very low. It just depends on the industry. You know, technology, software, they're going to have high EBITDA margins. Whereas, you know, a commodity sector is probably going to have low EBITDA margins. Okay? For example, Apple's EBITDA margin is 35.5%. Okay. And then we go to like an ExxonMobil. Let's see what their EBITDA margin is. Theirs is 16%. Okay. So there's not a strong number of what it should or really shouldn't be, but you always have to compare it just like really any metric, any ratio or percentage related to profitability or something like that. It's all gonna matter in relation to its competitors, in relation to its industry. Remember that. Even return on equity, return on assets. For example, I don't take return on equity in the banking industry the same as I take return on equity in the industrial industry. To me, they're very different. They could be the exact same number, but one could be more attractive than the other. Why? Well, it has to do with debt. How much debt are they taking on to create that return on equity? Because remember, part of return on equity calculation is the leverage of the balance sheet. How much debt does the company have? And the more debt that they have, the more risky that name is. So that's why I focus on return on assets, because that takes out the amount of leverage the company has on its balance sheet. So see how the understanding balance sheets and income statements and cash flow statements can be complex? And they're not just complex in relation to the company you're looking at, but they can get even more complex when you're trying to compare them over different industries and even within that same industry. So don't look for a specific EBITDA number. Look for it in relation to other companies in its industry, and look for EBITDA margins. That's what you want to look at, not just that raw number. Right. Now, is the 10-year yield going to 4%? It's at 2.2% now, and there's an analyst, Mark Holbert, who is arguing that bond traders and investors have been quite bearish on the 10-year yield. Or excuse me, they were bearish earlier this year when the yield was at about 1.6 or so. And then all of a sudden, they were bearish on the bonds, meaning they thought interest rates were going down. And guess what they did? They did the exact opposite and sentiment was at the extreme. And then the 10-year hits a level of, let's see, what was that? 2.5-ish, 2.5. And it's been coming back since, and now they're bearish again. They're bearish again on the 10-year yield, meaning people are trying to reduce their sensitivity to interest rates. And the last time this happened, there was a big rally in rates from 1.6 and change to 2.5. And he argues that the sentiment level that you're seeing today would bring the 10-year to 4% by Thanksgiving. It's not very far away. Tomorrow's September. Then you have October, and then, you know, not even all of November, and you get to Thanksgiving, so 2.5 months. Now, I don't think that's probably going to happen. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But even if rates get to 3%, 3% of the 10-year, I think that would be a strong headwind for the market. Not only for financial models that would reduce the model valuations for asset prices broadly, but it would certainly stall the housing market, because you'd have mortgage rates go to 5%, 5.5%, somewhere in that range, because they're at about 4% now. And I can see it happening. What's been interesting, been very interesting recently over this market sell-off, You had, what, 5 days ago, 6 days ago when the market was really selling off. You had the 10-year dropping. But it's really rebounded right to where it was when the market sell-off began, right around the 2.2 level. But the equity markets haven't rebounded nearly to that extent. Market's down 6% for the month. The 10-year's flat. Well, why is that? Well, a lot of people are suspecting that it's China. China is, as they're trying to now depreciate the yuan, they need to raise dollars to support the peg, support the currency, so the yuan doesn't slide even more. They don't want it to slide too much, right, and get out of control. But they want to manage the decline. And to manage that decline, they need dollars to create that peg. And how do you get dollars? Well, you sell dollar-denominated assets, such as treasuries. They have a lot of. $1.6 trillion in treasuries as of June. I believe it was. 1.4, 1.6, somewhere in there. So they have a lot of treasuries that they're liquidating. And that is suspected to be the main reason why yields have not really fallen, really at all, even though the market has. Let's go to Chris in Kentucky. How you doing, Chris?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
Doing good.
I had a quick question. Last week, I went completely cash on Thursday. I had some sell points where I said if the market kind of bounced back up to those levels, I was going to go to the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting in cash, and just want to kind of get your opinion on how to re-enter in this type of market. If you kind of look at the technical stock to stock and kind of set your own buy points based on the technicals, or you just kind of get a feel for the overall market, or kind of what you would do in my shoes?
I would look for strength in the high yield market and a change in direction, high yield bonds, because that's really where the market has been weak and trading sideways for a while now, and that is all because of the credit spreads. Credit spreads have been widening out, and this has been weighing on the market, and it finally hit over the past couple weeks. And you're going to see a bounce here, just like we did in the market. So that's a big factor that I would consider. Are high yield spreads widening out, continue to widen out, or are they falling? A. And then B, technically. I think we're about probably going to 1600 on the S&P. 16 to 1700 in the medium term. Is that going is medium term is to me the next 18 months. I don't know when that's exactly going to happen. It might happen this year, it might happen next year. Might happen early 2017. It's hard to know. But ultimately, what you should be doing right now is understand you were in a downtrend. The moving averages are pointing down. And there isn't a lot technically positive about this market. So I would be patient. I would be doing research. I'd be building a watch list. And when you start to see more manicness and panic from the media, and everyone's freaking out, that's when I would re-enter the market. And I don't see that yet. Do you?
No, not this time. I love to have happened what happened last Monday and take advantage of that situation exactly like you said. So I'm just kind of sitting back on the sidelines and waiting for that oversell point.
Yeah.
And then try to take advantage of people's fear, basically.
Yeah, well, see, I think that you'll probably see the markets. There's something about the markets. Markets tend to have things happen in threes, okay? And to me, last week was, or the week before, was the first signal. Okay, it was the first sell-off, the first panic. And I think we're going to have really two more of those type of moments before we really get a bottom. Sometimes it's four, but usually it's three, around three. And we're going to get a bounce, and I said this before, we're going to get a bounce. And how high the bounce goes, I think maybe we get above 2,000, the S&P. But I think it'll eventually roll over, mainly because high-yield markets continue to stay weak. So that's something that I would watch for and make sure that you keep an eye on to see when those next capitulation episodes happen. And in the meantime, gather a watch list. Companies that you really like from a business operation standpoint, and find out what's a good value. Figure out what's a good value that you would be happy owning this stock at. And then maybe write some puts, some long-term puts at those prices where you'd be happy to own that particular stock at those levels. That might be a good strategy as well. So there's a lot of ways that you can re-enter the market. And it just depends on how much work you're willing to put in, how diligent you are at following the market and watching the internals and watching the different aspects that are important to the market. So, I mean, how active of a trader are you? How active of an investor are you? How attentive are you, Chris?
Daily.
Okay. So you're at it daily. So you should be able to follow those changes in the market. Right?
Correct.
So I would say it's technicals still are too weak for you to be deploying capital. And I would continue to be patient and gather a watch list and look for large technical levels. Like I said, 1600 are probably some good levels somewhere in there. But that may be just another pit stop to lower prices. And like I said, I think you'll know when credit markets really start to improve. Thanks for calling, Chris. Now, Invest Talk is made possible each weekday by KP Financial. Now, Steve and I talk about parallel investing, and it's an important factor in how KP Financial manages portfolios. To each of our clients, it means we're walking with them side by side, personally investing in the same portfolio of stocks, bonds, etc. that we are investing for our clients. And to learn more about our investment programs, go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab.
We're glad you're with us on Invest Talk today, and whether you're 20-something or something just past retirement, we're here to help you make better investing and money decisions along the way. But we need to know what you need to know. 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a very big week when it comes to data, economic data coming up. Now, today we had crude oil supplies fall, and that was pretty big. You had Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index was very weak, minus 15. The Midwest Economy Index also remained in negative territory, meaning shrinking economy. And, you know, those two areas are dependent on oil prices. And coming up this week, you're going to have Chicago PMI, unit motor vehicle sales. You're going to have the ADP employment report Wednesday, the manufacturing ISM report as well. Thursday's non-manufacturing ISM report. And then Friday is the big one, is the non-farm payrolls report, which is expected to be at 220,000 jobs created in the month of August, and unemployment rate to fall 0.1% to 5.2%. So watch for these big numbers coming out. It'll be important to see what the Fed does in September. Now, if you have a question you want answered, give us a call now, 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and we want to hear your take on today's financial news. Tell us your own investing story. We'd love to hear it. Call our 24-hour listener line and record your commentary, and then we'll look forward to hearing it on the next Invest Talk.
Now, this is Invest Talk Personal, and if you've ever signed up for Facebook and then deleted your account, you'd be surprised to know it's not really gone. In fact, you enter the same email address you used when signing up for the account and the same password, you will log back in as if you have never left, literally. everything will be just as you left it. Same profile picture, settings, same friends, etc. To a lot of people, this is disconcerting, to say the least. And, you know, Facebook isn't the only company that makes deleting your account difficult or even impossible. And this is important because if some people get a hold of your account, they could make orders for themselves, use your profile or use your account, and if you have credit cards saved, things like that, they may be able to reactivate your account and use it and charge, and you may never, you know, realize it because you didn't do it. Now, a new website helps users by providing appropriate links to delete their accounts for various companies all over the internet, from Facebook to Netflix, many others. There are currently over 100 companies that they provide direct links as to how to get your account deleted. The company is called Just Delete Me, and their website is www.justdelete.me. This isn't a plug or anything. We don't get anything for this. It's just something I think is important for everybody to understand. If they really are trying to delete an online account, 9 times out of 10, your account isn't really deleted. It's just kind of inactive. But your data is still sitting there, out there in the ether. And you know, some websites are easy to get your account deleted from. Some are very hard. Some are impossible. And they rate it for you. But even if it's hard, like Amazon, apparently is very hard. And they give a blurb saying to close your account, you have to contact Amazon via email, and they give you a link to the form to do it, and you have to request your account to be closed. So I think if you ever have an old account that has credit cards, personal information listed or saved in those accounts, I think it's important to get those completely deleted and make sure you're not at risk. Just think of all the hacks. Think of all the hacks that go on with all these different systems. And why are you putting your data at risk to being hacked when you're not even using that particular service anymore? So for more information or to look into deleting an online account, just visit www.justdelete.me. So that's Invest Talk Personal for this Monday. And if you have a topic you'd like to know more about, especially when it comes to personal finance, just give us a call now at 888-99-CHART or send me a note at contactjustin on investtalk.com. Now let's try to answer another listener line question. They left it on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Dan. I'm a podcast listener in Roanoke, Virginia, and a longtime listener. Just had a question about dividends. The brokerage I use for trading and investing, it does not allow reinvestment of dividends. So I was thinking about trying to invest in dividends using my 401k. There's a dividend fund. It's the BlackRock Equity Dividend Fund. With mutual funds, are dividends reinvested? I just didn't know how that works. Also, I know you've talked before about seeing the fund manager and their track record when you get into a fund. How do you actually find out the track record of the person managing the fund? Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, well, that's fairly easy. You should be able to go to Morningstar.com. You'll get some basics of the track record of that particular fund. The BlackRock Equity Dividend Fund, I would say, is a above average fund, a large cap value fund, which, you know, most of the dividend focused funds are. They're value oriented, and I would say it's average or so, maybe slightly above average. So, you know, not bad, but nothing spectacular either. And how do you reinvest dividends in a mutual fund? Well, you just have to have that setting in your brokerage account. I'm not sure how that works on the in your particular 401k, but you should be able to have that that setting automatically. And I would inquire with their HR department how that works, if it's already set up that way, and if not, if you can make that particular change. Now, before we close for the day, be sure to sign up for our InvestTalk Insider Program. It's free, and it gives you access to our library of wealth webinars and info sheets, as well as other resources as well. You can register right there on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening and being part of the program. Please join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.